because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
Okay.
I mean, already much better. And to be honest, I kind of like that setup. You look like you're pretty comfy on the couch. You have a nice little backdrop of the kitchen and some succulents. Is this, you have a lot of flowers. What are they?
Oh, we have succulents. We have a orchid, couple orchids, and then a something. We got it at Lowe's, which who would have thunk it 10 years ago, 5 years ago even, that I would be taking frequent trips to Lowe's. Who would have guessed it, Robert?
Lowe's Home Improvement Store, and you're able to buy flowers there.
Robert, that's exactly what it is. It's a home improvement store, and that's very important to me these days.
I didn't realize you could buy flowers there, though.
Yes, you can. You can buy plants. It's mostly plants, but you can buy – there's the outdoor section. You get one of your little rolling pallet things, and you just load it up, Robert. You just load it up for home improvements.
Rolling pallets. Yeah, I haven't frequented many Home Depots or Lowe's lately, but remember that very much from my childhood where I would be sitting on one of those getting rolled around until we filled it up. Then I'd be sitting on top of that stuff.
Correct, Robert. And you were filling up your pallet with things for home improvement, which is very important. Which is very important. Yes.
Yeah,
I believe that's in yes, Robert. So
and I feel like this is a pretty prominent part of your future in terms of what your life's going to look like. A lot more visits to Lowe's, but you're going to be doing it not just by yourself, Adam, or not just with Prof, but you're going to be doing it with a little creature that Greg Dowell hopes gets named Mark. And Mark, little mini Mark, will be sitting on your little pallet while you roll him around. Is that accurate?
That is, Robert, that is correct.
Okay. Yes,
that is exactly correct. And I can't wait for errand running with a small child. That sounds like it's really easy and nothing ever goes wrong and it's just smooth, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm hoping for.
Adam, do you feel like you're going to be a parent that kind of like straps the baby to your chest and you just kind of like do your thing walking around with the baby on your chest? Or do you feel like you're going to be more of like a stroller cart guy that just pushes the cart around?
Let's get intense about it. I think I'm a baby Bjorn kind of guy, Robert.
Yeah.
That's what I think. You know, front, back, whatever. Doesn't matter. Just strap that lad in and let's get going.
You also know I think that's a pretty good idea, Adam, is because you have a really good, solid, low center of gravity, and you've got a solid base from the waist down.
Yeah, it all starts from the base, Robert. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that nice athletic base is very important. And it's not just out there on the court. It's in day-to-day life as well, Robert. So thank you for noticing that.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you commenting on that as well, Robert.
Yeah. I mean, there's not many people I know that have a better base than you.
Yeah. We're a decent family from the waist down. You know, we got strong legs, strong hips, that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's a positive.
I think you guys are going to be breeding an athlete here.
I hope so. I'm going to tape ping pong paddles to his hands and throw ping pong balls at him like Agassi's dad did. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Did Johnny Goldberg ever tell you the story that's like what Jack Johnson, JW and George's dad did that to them as they were children?
I did not know this. This is a great story. Please elaborate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember all the details, but Johnny was like flabbergasted that I hadn't heard that, you know, as babies, he would Jack would tie like ping pong balls or something on a string and they would have to like hit it as little infants.
That's some Agassi stuff right there. I love that. Get them started early. It turns out I didn't even know this because I did go to a lovely a Saturday 9-hour birthing class. It was very fun, you know, just
no other way you'd like to spend your Saturday.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. It was either that or it was, you know, Lowe's, Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know if we'll have time. Lovely afternoon with the Olive Garden, you know. So, you know, just some real high-quality domesticated stuff. What was I talking about? I forgot. I lost my train of thought.
I don't know. We were talking about babies. We were talking about babies first and then Jack Johnson.
Oh yeah. So the Jack Johnson, no, that's, I'm definitely going to do that. That's the Agassi special. I think it was in his, I never read the book. I heard everyone said it was pretty good, like Open or something like that.
Oh, dude, I haven't read it since it first came out, but it was pretty insane.
Yeah, like I remember him like saying he was playing the French Open final, and like his whole like image was the hair, and he had like a wig on, and he thought it was gonna fall off in the middle of the match.
Yeah. I mean,
talk about some crazy stuff. But no, I've heard good things about that book. But anyway, yeah. So that's the plan. Breed an athlete, throw some ping pong balls at him. Oh, I was talking about my birthing class.
Yeah.
So apparently they don't even really see properly for a while. Like they only kind of see shadows for a while. Then it's like black and white for a period of months. And they don't really like have full vision till like a year. I didn't realize.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the process. So
is it also true? Well, one, I didn't know that. That's incredible. So I'm glad you're bringing this knowledge to the podcast.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And two, is it true, this might just be a rumor, that an infant's, the size of their eye when they come out is the size of our eye right now?
Wow, that's extreme. I didn't hear anything about
like,
that.
Like, does their actual eyeball grow?
Ooh, that's a nice little fun fact. Hey, Prof, Google that. Does the kid's eyeball grow?
Or is the eyeball the same size from birth to, like, death?
I know like the nose and the ears grow and all that stuff, but that's a great question about the eyeball, Robert. I'm not sure about that one.
I've heard a rumor that it's the same size, but that feels unlikely to me. It's hard
for
me to
check that, Prof. Back check that. You're doing great, babe.
Yeah. Yeah. I just hear something in the background.
She just mumbles, I don't have my phone, as she's like shoveling bowl 7 of cereal into her face. Can't really say much at this point though.
Is she still working at Campbell, or is she just chilling out for maternity?
No, she's a psychopath. She's not even taking maternity leave. It's just planned out perfectly for the summer. She's not even taking any extra time.
Right.
Winter
finals.
She only has one more week.
Oh, so she's right there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one more week of class and then finals the following week, if I'm not mistaken. So
I don't want to think that she planned this all out, premeditated the timing with the whole pregnancy, but it feels a little premeditated because the timing's just a little too perfect.
Yeah. I agree, Robert, but you can plan these things a little bit better when you're married to someone with a really strong seed and you know that you can get pregnant at a certain time. And that's pretty much what happened with us. So a lot of people, you can't plan it out. It's tough. It doesn't always work, but
when the seed is strong,
you can plan it. You can plan it.
Just snap your fingers and it happens.
Pow. Just like that.
Pow.
Yeah. Congrats to you, Adam, on a strong seed.
Thank you.
So you got a lot going on in the next month.
Well, really what I need to do, Robert, is I actually need to apologize to you and the fans for this long hiatus that we've had. And I think that it was a mistake on my part, Robert, to give a little too much attention to my travels and my pregnant wife. And I need to get my priorities back to where they need to be with It Feels Right podcast very high on the list, actually number one on the list. But I wanted to apologize to you and our fans. And we are not going to have any more breaks of this length as we were going to put out a consistent product, because that is very important, Robert.
Well, I don't know if the podcast should come over to your family, but it feels like it could be a decent outlet and reprieve at times.
Yes. No, I do feel, I think that that's kind of, well, so what some people have been suggesting to me is that I'm going to be looking for some breaks from my regular life, and little hour pod is a perfect little break.
And I think it might be really good, because I feel like you're going to be kind of like wound like a little wind up doll. You're going to be wound up pretty tight, you know, not a lot of sleep potentially, who knows. And this is going to be your outlet to just unwind and like let it rip. So I think we're going to be getting the best version of Adam Stone moving forward.
That's right. It's like when you go to those sleepovers when you're a kid and you just kind of get delirious and start giggling. Sometimes that creates good content, you know? So you don't want to go too far, but you know, I'm working on an hour or two of sleep. I jump in there, you know, and maybe it's what the pod needs. We'll just have to find out.
Yeah. I just had when you said sleepovers, kid, I don't know why this is the first story or thought that came to my mind, but I remember being in a weird, like, not a weird sleepover, it was a sleepover, but with like a lot of guys, maybe like guys on a baseball team or something.
Right.
And, you know, we had to be, I would guess, 11 to 13, somewhere in that ballpark of age. And there's this one kid that, you know, was clearly already like hitting puberty. Like his voice is super deep already. And I'm a, like, I was a late bloomer, had high pitched voice, was not there, grew zero hair on my body at that point. Mm-hmm. And I remember for whatever reason, like we were all just infatuated with how this kid had already turned into a man. And we're just like, God, he's jacked. He's got a deep voice. He's got hair growing from everywhere. And I remember, like, I don't know why he did this, but it's a little scarring, obviously, because it's the first thing I thought of when you said sleepover. But he pulled his pants down far enough, just above his genitalia,
the bush.
We just saw just a massive bush, and I was just like, that happens. Like, you get hair there too.
That's right.
And it was just, it's always stuck with me, Adam. So
well, sleepovers. That's a lovely story, and thank you for sharing. That's Jason McCorkle. That's who I grew up with, Jason McCorkle. Yeah. I think I've even said this on the pod before, where it was like fourth grade, and we were just all in awe that he had armpit hair. We were just like, this kid. Early, but you know, often you start early, you fizzle out, Robert. That's how it works. So, you know, there's nothing wrong. All you kids out here listening, don't be afraid of being a late bloomer. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay.
Yeah. The slow, gradual build. It's perfect. Yeah. I'm just now starting to be able to grow facial hair. Like, I used to not be able to grow it between like my lip and like this bit. So the progression of my facial hair, Adam, was really solid neck hair, big neck beard guy up until like college. And then it started slowly making its way north. And then it all kind of came together. But the only parts that I struggled with until the last, really, I'm 37 now, I probably couldn't connect the mustache to the beard until like last year. And now that hair is starting to come in, not very thick, but I can tell that I'm finally starting to connect it to where if I did want to grow a beard, I think it would actually be a possibility now. Whereas in 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it would be like a standalone mustache and then like a beard that doesn't connect to that mustache, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I think that's a common little area that doesn't connect for a lot.
You know who it's not a common area for, Adam? You, you grow strong facial hair, and it's something else that I respect deeply about you.
Oh yes, well, and I appreciate that. And it is. It gets a little red if it gets too long, but for the most part, I can grow it. I can grow it. So
yes, you can.
Strong seed, full strong beard. Seed. You know, if you're a man, grown, you're a man. If
just a grown man. Yeah. I mean, and you're definitely a man.
this is a lovely first 15 or 20 minutes here, Robert. Would you enjoy talking about pickleball, or would you like to just keep ranting on?
No, I think you know, for the most part, this is a pickleball podcast, but we do talk about what feels right, and me talking about man hair, that's all right.
You're talking about 13-year-old boys' bushes.
I think it's a lovely segue into a man that doesn't have hair. Like, I don't think he has a shred of hair from the head follicles down, to be honest. And I think that's a man named Tyson McGuffin, who's had a good little run this past week in Red Rock, and not only in Red Rock, but he scooted his little butt down to Phoenix and threw out the first pitch for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Been a pretty eventful last couple weeks for Mr. McGuffin. And
tell me,
want to give him a shout out?
Yeah, tell me if wearing a jersey with no shirt underneath, with it unbuttoned, if that isn't just perfect for TM. I mean, it's an ideal situation. So he's got the jersey on, he's got the tats out, he's got his little, you know, built-in underwear hanging out the bottom of his shorts. He's doing his thing.
He's got a Skechers on. You know, the pickleball Skechers. It was fully on brand. It was fully on brand. He was raising the roof, walking out to the mound. You know, getting the crowd into it. I was hoping for a few more, beating on the chest. Hoping for a little bit more barking. But all in all, solid performance. Nice little toss to home plate. You know, it was a I go back and forth, right? Like, part of me, if you're going up there to throw the first pitch, you want to throw like a Hummer, you know, you want to give it all you got. And the other part is just be casual, give it a little toss,
right.
You know,
be cool.
Act like you're supposed to be there. Right? Don't act like a tryhard. And that's the card he played. He played, you know, it's just another day in the life of TM, bro. I'm going to throw the first pitch at the Diamondbacks game, and I'm just going to do it casually because that's all I want to do.
Yes. He probably didn't beat his chest because his sternum is sore from aggressively attacking Brendan Long in that final with chest bumps and just all kinds of stuff. He kept running into him. It was pretty funny, actually. So
it was pretty funny. And yeah, I mean, that's a perfect segue into pickleball. Well done. We went from hairy guys to hairless guys to baseball to now pickleball. Perfect.
Yeah.
So Brendan Long, big weekend with Tyson. I think, honestly, you know, there's a big group of guys, I would say probably in that 16 to 18 to like the 18, 16, 18 to, you could go as high as like to 30, 35 mm-hmm. in the rankings mm-hmm. that are all pretty bunched in together there. So when I look, obviously Brennan's been playing fantastic pickleball. And I think with Tyson, to me, looking at that partnership and looking how that played out and them winning gold is not to take anything away from Brendan. Played fantastic, played mostly on the left, played a little on the right, but having a rock like Tyson, and we've talked about Adam, I don't think Tyson gets probably enough credit for how consistent he is across all events. And to have somebody that's, you know, used to that moment, is a rock, is a very supportive partner, regardless of who he's playing with, which is also a very underrated skill. Not that he has, you know, very low level partners very often or much lower than his ability, but he's always a very, very supportive partner. And I think without Tyson, you put Brendan with like, even with like, I don't know, another player that maybe a stronger alpha guy, I don't think they do that well, but I think it was kind of the perfect mix of Tyson being a rock and also having the experience and kind of the smarts on court to carry Brendan and help him get through those matches. But yeah, big weekend for them.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And of course, big topic of conversation is the paddle technology and the offense, but let's be clear, uncontrollable not missing is still a pretty good thing to have in your skill set. So I think it's important to note that. Rolling from mid shin, creating some awesome offense and some fantastic shot making. Great, it's awesome. It can carry you for stretches of time. But when you play a clean game, you don't have weaknesses as many weaknesses to pick on, and you're a stud with your third shots and your mid-court play. Your team's always making it to the kitchen, and you're at a very high clip, high percentage. These are things that translate to wins, Robert. So you got to have both. You got to have everything these days. Firing away, being that offensive force is great, and it can win you matches. But, man, being a consistent, solid player out there can also win you a lot of matches, and that's Tyson. That's Tyson McGuffin to a T.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point, Adam, in terms of like, if you're an amateur player listening, you know, you watch a lot of these matches and you see the offense, you see the Ernies, you see like the backhand flicks from, you know, the shin and the knees that work, you know, nowadays with the paddle tech and paddle technology, not paddle tech. But and I think that's what oftentimes amateurs look to add and implement to their game. And you're exactly right, Adam. I think, you know, just thinking about myself when I'm on court struggling with a partner, the most frustrating part for me is if we're not able to get to the kitchen, if we're driving, leaving drops too high, and the points are just clipped before we're even able to make our way up to the transition zone and to the kitchen. It's a very frustrating game. So I think if you're an amateur player, 4.5, 5.0, getting higher, I think, you know, the greatest way to improve is getting really, really good, getting to the kitchen early on in points, whether it's the drop or whether it's transition zone. But I don't think enough emphasis is placed on drilling there and spending a ton of time getting comfortable in transition, because that's Tyson's game. He gets to the kitchen, you know, it's similar to your game, Adam. Like, he gets to the kitchen at a really, really high clip. And once you're at the kitchen, he's not going to do crazy attacks off the bounce, and he's not going to do weird speed ups. He's just going to make a ton of balls. Mm-hmm. And if you have a partner, especially like Brendan, who's very offensive minded and does have strong attacks and strong roles, you know, it's a good recipe, especially if Brendan's on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And maybe even the kind of the polar opposite is, I don't think the levels are that different in this moment. Now, granted, there's more upside from age related and some other tools that he has from James Ignatowicz. But his, yeah. I mean, he even says it. He's like, sometimes I just don't make it to the kitchen. Sometimes my drops and my midcourt play is garbage. And he feels very comfortable when he gets up there. So it's basically two players at the same level or close to the same level, Tyson and Ignatowicz, and they just get there in completely opposite ways. So a lot more threatening, a lot more, you know, thunder in the counterattacks from James, but sometimes he just doesn't make it to the kitchen. So, you know, it's hard to have everything, but lots of different ways to win in this game. And you know, everyone needs to know that.
Yeah. And you touched on a little bit, Adam, with the paddle situation, and It became an even bigger topic, right? Like, I don't think that topic's going to go anywhere until something's actually done about it. And shout out to the Pickleball Studio guys, Chris and Will. I saw Chris put out a pretty interesting video on, because I mean, this is the thing, right? It's like, how do we tell if these paddles are delaminated just by, you know, we can hear it. Yeah. Like, that's the one thing. You know, we know what a pickleball sounds like coming off these different paddles. And if it sounds, you know, very different, then there's something up. But Chris Olson put out a video where you can actually press into the center of the paddle with your thumbs. And if you hear kind of the crackling,
crunching,
that's a good, the crunching, crackling, it's a good indication that the paddle's delaminated. And he even was bouncing a ball with a D-Lam paddle and a regular paddle, and it's a significantly different sound. So, I mean, that's a incredibly subjective test, right? There's no science behind pressing under the paddle with your thumb or just bouncing a ball and listening to it. You know, you're not going to be able to rule out a paddle if you're at a tournament and a referee does that. But it was nice to actually see, okay, like, this is a, you know, an at-home test that you can do to see if a paddle's D-Lam. And just hope to see something implemented where we can actually, you know, gauge this and weather this and create a level playing field, because, you know, this isn't something you see in really other sports. Like, you never see this in tennis where it's a matter of, you know, you're using this paddle versus this paddle and this paddle's or this racket's doctored and this one's not. It's just something that needs to be solved, because right now there's a pretty big discrepancy out there in terms of paddles people are using, and it's creating significant advantages.
Yeah. So no, I'm pretty big airhead a lot of the times, not the most observant guy, but I mean, I can walk into like a 30 court facility and there's some dude 7 courts down and I can hear it and be like, well, that doesn't, something sounds weird about that paddle. It's coming off differently or hearing it. So I saw that little clip as well, with just a couple of the, you know, the crackling and the sound, that the difference in sound. So yeah, I don't know. It's pretty close to beating a dead horse kind of situation here, as we've been talking about it for a while, but it's just such a big deal, that we have to, you know, continue to chat about it and keep it on the forefront, because, you know, something's got to give. So
yeah. And we saw, a couple instances at Red Rock, you know, kind of the primary one that people were talking about was with Leia playing Salome. I believe it was a semifinal in women's singles pro. And yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of chatter about how people were just complaining that Leia's, you know, entitled and whiny and just play right and challenge the paddle after. But at the same time, it's like, it does raise awareness, and if a player's going to throw a fit, it's gonna make something have to change about it, right? If she just goes through that match and like and just plays and doesn't throw a big stink, then, you know, you might not get the same result. I think you have to be outspoken about it, and you have to express displeasure, even if it makes you look like I didn't see it as being whiny necessarily. And I feel like as a viewer of the weekend, right? And I didn't play, but just viewing and watching, it's what people like it. Look at the buzz it created, right? Look, you have people talking, you have, it's fun to watch too. It's fun to watch somebody kind of like, you know, storming around court, yelling at the opponent about a paddle. Like as a casual viewer, I'm not like, oh, that's such bad sportsmanship. I'm just like, oh, this is pretty fun and pretty entertaining to watch because this person's losing their mind and thinks the opponent's cheating. And I mean, isn't that what we want as viewers? That's what I want as a viewer. I don't want to just necessarily watch a boring match between two players without personalities just going at it. I mean, if it's really, really high level pickleball, sure. But I would much rather see somebody kind of chirping and getting pissed off and having a personality on court. So that's my vote. I don't see it as whiny. I see it as expressing displeasure and being very upset that she feels very strongly that Salome was cheating. So, and I guess the issue here is that there's no on-site testing of these paddles. They just collect the paddles and then I think send it off for 2 weeks somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just the process now is broken. We can't continue like this. So there has to be some way to regulate it and keep it consistent across the board.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I saw a little clip somewhere. I don't even know what I saw, or maybe it was a conversation. And they were kind of comparing, just to piggyback on what you were saying, comparing the two personalities. So you have Salome, who obviously has made some questionable calls and now has a questionable paddle, but she taps paddle. She says the right thing in the interview. She kind of goes about her business, you know, isn't too crazy on court, even if, you know, some of the actual calls and some of the other things are a little crazy. And then you have Leia Jansen, who is very much, you know, emotions on her sleeve, kind of stomping around doing this or that. So some people give Salome the get out of jail card because she kind of behaves properly, even though she's doing some shady stuff. And then, you know, Leia gets a bad rap because she's, you know, doing her little routines and kind of has that RBF sometimes when she's playing and things of that nature. So I think it's an important point. You know, if someone's being polite, going about their business, but obviously looking for advantages and if not cheating, borderline cheating, and someone else who's outspoken saying things about all different kinds of topics, kind of, you know, storming around the court, but is doing less of those things. What's right? I don't know exactly, Rob, but it is a very interesting kind of conundrum and two very different demeanors on court.
Yeah. And a couple of the counterpoints that I saw online to Salome, you know, one, they're playing at Red Rock, they're playing at altitude, I think 2,700 feet or something,
right?
Cold conditions. So ball flies faster, harder to control. Salome weights her paddle up, I think, beyond 10 or 11 ounces. So very, very heavy. And comparison, I would say most pros are in the 8.5 to 9 ounce ballpark. I'm about 8.8 usually. And, those are a couple of things, right? But I mean, we're talking, you don't see this often in pro pickleball just because it's not a very big court and the wiffle ball doesn't travel that fast.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, the backhand laser return down the line. That was
return winners, Robert, against a 5'10" or so opponent with incredible court.
That's
coverage.
Fast. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty like Leia's one of the best players on the lunge. She gets to some balls that she shouldn't get to, and to hit a return winner on her is pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, altitude or heavy paddle or not. I mean, that's something you don't see every day. Yeah, and I'll tell you right now, just watching that singles match, I didn't see any of the guys cranking ground strokes as hard as Salome was. So, I, you know, not saying paddles delam or whatever,
right.
Whether it was or wasn't, it was she was hitting the ball pretty hard.
Yeah, that's all I saw. Like, it was earlier in the day. I was very in and out watching, but I think it was Connor Garnett 8 to 10 feet behind the baseline on his back foot, clean two-handed backhand winner up the line. You know, it's just like, man, you know, like he's right on the kitchen. I mean, right on the baseline. Sure. Maybe if he has this momentum for it, he's on his back foot. He's 10 feet behind the baseline and he's hitting two-handed. And when I think it was against someone good, obviously too. Yeah. So maybe there's something funky going on, but either way, some of the shot making is improving regardless. So you kind of combine the two with some possible shady equipment plus the talent coming in, and you see shots you've never seen before. And I think we saw that a little bit at Red Rock Open.
Yeah, and the other instance was Travis Rettmeier playing Tyson. Both Selkirk guys, and I'm not sure what the statements, how it all played out, but I know Tyson mentioned that his paddle felt hot in the first game, so he switched it out to a different paddle in game two, and then I think Travis had words with him after the match. I think Tyson won in three, and Travis put out a post saying, you know, he felt like that paddle was hot early on, and then Tyson switched. But I just found that interesting. Both Selkirk guys, both respect each other a lot. And, you know, surely unintentional. And Tyson switched the paddle out when you know, he felt that it was coming off too hot. So, yeah, just need to find some legit on-site testing that makes it easy to ensure that it's a level playing field, because These little margins, man, like as we see in pickleball, especially on the men's side, margins are getting smaller and smaller, and these little tiny edges, whether they're tiny or not, every edge matters now, like with the talent level so bunched together that it's an increasingly big deal. And especially if PPA is correct and Pardo is correct in terms of betting coming as soon as next month. Like we've got this controversy, the paddle delamination. We've got a ton of rumblings on the performance enhancing drugs front. So right now there's no regulation, right? You know, there's no doping scandal because it's not a scandal if it's allowed, right? So we can rumble and complain all we want about people using performance enhancing drugs, but at this point, you know, if they're able to get the drugs in a legal way, there's nothing illegal about doing it. So
right. I think it's a great point, Rob, and it's important to talk about, you know, those margins at the top, because this is a big trickle down thing. So let's just use, of course, we're going to use tennis as an example. Say a tennis player is number whatever, 25 or 30 or something like that. And he decides he wants to get a team. So he has a coach that travels with them. He has a personal trainer. This could be 0.5% of a better performance from him, maybe 1%, something very, very small. But when you talk about trickling down to prize money, to sponsors, and pickleball getting better partners when you have better results, I mean, we could be talking about a six-figure sum of value that you're gaining by being 2 or 3% better. So all these things are a huge deal. We don't have the huge gaps anymore. So if it's making you a percent or two better, this could be $150,000 worth of value in the next 2 years that you're getting from sponsorships, better partners, better this, better that. So it might not seem like a big deal, but it very much is as we grow as a sport.
No, it's such a good point. I mean, we're talking, even Challenger versus Premier, right? It's like, you know, the prize money and that alone, one in Challenger, you're not guaranteed to maintain your team spot for those three events, right? You can get dropped after one.
Sure.
So, you know, let's say you get drafted in the original draft, you're not guaranteed that money in three events for the year. You're guaranteed one event. Whereas in Premier, the prize money is significantly more. I don't know the exact number, but 3x plus more, I believe. And you're guaranteed to stay in for all three events. So you're guaranteed that money for the rest of the year. And being on those teams versus Challenger, you're right. You know, sponsorship wise, it all kind of adds up, and the trickle down's real. So these little small things, little small advantages that people are trying to take advantage of are big increasers in terms of earning potential.
Right. And let's be clear here. Singles is the most popular form of tennis. Doubles is the most popular form of pickleball at this point.
Yeah.
Your partner's a huge damn deal. I mean,
yeah.
Take my word for it. You know, I got carried to a lot of medals because I, you know, kind of groomed a partner and had a partner that, you know, was better than me. So, I mean, do you think these things aren't factoring? And these are huge deals. And we see kind of now it's already coming down in terms of length of partnerships. Things are changing quicker. There's quicker turnover. If you have a bad, you know, 2 or 3 months or 5 tournaments 2 years ago, you're probably hanging on to your partner. Now you might get dropped. It's a higher percent chance. So your partner is a huge deal. Things change quickly. To have a result or two, or to possibly get a part from a lower partner to someone at your level, or get someone even better than you, is a huge deal for your career. And it all factors in. It's all factored into your results and some of your play on the court. So these are very big deals and very real, you know, detriments and advantages to having these small edges, Robert.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's another good point, Adam, in terms of the way the game's changing, the way these players are looking for edges. I think, you know, when we've talked a lot about partner controversy in the past, dropping partners, that kind of thing, and replacing partners, switching partners, I think that's just going to continue to happen at a faster clip, in my opinion, because
yes,
this stuff is real money now. You know, I think we, you know, in the past, even call it the past year, it felt like there was way less at stake than there is now. It just feels like this, like the stakes in pickleball it's really just coming together in a very real way where money's significant and the earning potential of, you know, getting to the top 10, getting to the top 5 is significantly greater than it has been in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see that in terms of human beings being human beings and making decisions that aren't necessarily kind of the old school pickleball way of honoring your commitment because you promised to play with this person in June or July. You know, you have a partner that, you know, you have somebody that loses a partner that's a great player and they ask to play with you. You know, what do you do in that moment if you know that, like, you know, playing with that person is going to significantly increase your chance of winning that tournament and earning more sponsorship and getting matching for that tournament, you know, matching earnings for your sponsor.
Yeah. So are you going to bail out for 3 years ago for the $5,000 in value, or are you going to add a zero to it like these days? And you're going to make that decision for $50,000 worth of value. Big differences,
yeah.
Rob, when you add,
no,
when you're starting to, when you're adding zeros, it's a big difference.
it's a big difference. And, I think we're going to see a lot more of it. I just, you know, for better or worse, I think people are going to make decisions based on their financial careers and it's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little bit,
yeah.
Because I mean, it's I mean, it's a great story. I mean, Tyson, James, I don't know, whatever it was. I think it was actually Brendan Long who mentioned something in the interview. And I think Brendan Long occasionally maybe doesn't say the right thing at the right time, from what I know of him. So he kind of just went off in the interview talking about how basically Tyson got dropped 2 or 3 weeks ago by James, who was playing with Riley, because Matt doesn't go to the Red Rock. So it's pretty cool that he was dropped, picked up Brendan Long, ended up beating Riley and James, and then beating Deckel and Colin in the finals. You know, that's a pretty cool situation. It happened to me once at the World Pickleball Championships, where I was playing with Colin, and he got a call from Matt, who was significantly better than me at that time. And so I happily just gave Colin away to Matt and was like, hey, you guys go for it. Good luck. And I ended up playing with Daniel Moore and we ended up beating them in that tournament. So I'm not going to lie. It felt good. It felt good to your partner get upgraded and beat that partner. So I thought that was pretty interesting though. And I know that Riley and James are thinking about playing some together moving forward. I have absolutely no idea how many tournaments that entails or whatever, just pure
even this year.
even this year, right?
So maybe dropping Tyson to I mean, that's interesting.
I don't know, guys. If I'm going to say something facts, I'm going to say it facts, but I will put a disclaimer out there if I'm not positive, and this is that situation.
I've heard the same. I don't know. But what I do know is that I watched a fair amount of Red Rock and watched the matches of Riley and James that were on the stream. And it's, I feel like, you know, obviously I would put Riley ahead of Tyson in terms of men's doubles. I think that's just been proven on court and on paper, and that's just done. But at the same time, partnerships matter and gelling matters. And obviously it was their first time playing together, but that's probably the worst I've seen James play since MLP,
right?
You know, Newport Beach.
Robert, here's a question for you. Is it possible to gel with Riley Newman on court? Is that an option?
I'm not exactly sure
it is, Rob.
Yeah, it's a fair question. Riley goes out there and kind of takes care of his own business, and you're not going to get a lot from him in terms of a partner, right? He's going to talk a little strategy with you. He's not necessarily going to be rolling his eyes or like, you know, throwing his arms up in the air and getting pissed off visibly and publicly like that. But he's also not going to be super encouraging or supportive or anything like that. So he kind of does his own thing. And I feel like he needs a partner that's able to do that as well. So
yeah, right. Yeah, they're perfect for each other.
Yeah, no, 100%. So even though, you know, James has more upside and has youth on the side over Matt Wright, you know, in terms of personality on court, in terms of, you know, kind of playing that role of it's a perfect example when Matt and Riley played Dylan and J-Dub in Austin, they were getting smoked. They lost the first game. They were down in the second game. And then they just went full bully mode. They went full bully mode in terms of, you know, come on, stare downs, you know, the whole shebang, and the kids fell apart. And that's, they know that's how you beat them. You get loud, you get in their face and you bully them off the court. You know, you don't have to play pickleball. You just be bullies. And that's what they did. And I don't know. And you're right. In terms of gelling, that might be as much as Riley could gel with somebody as somebody like Matt Wright.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, you know, it's a small knock. There's not a lot of things to knock Riley on the pickleball court, but I, you know, just playing him so many times, playing with him before, now being, you know, the helping out with the hard eights, you know, you're right. He's not the warmest partner, but that guy's a stone cold killer.
Yeah.
He is, his level always stays high. He's when the moment's big, he goes for it, and he plays big. So, you know, it's hard to have everything, guys. Let's be clear here. To be that warm, supportive partner and have ice water in your veins and play big in big moments. I mean, can you have it all? I'm sure you can, but let's be clear. That's not an easy situation. I think that this is not a knock on Riley. We're just talking pickleball here, because I think he's just a ridiculously good player and a stone cold killer, but he's not going to tap you on the butt and you know, whisper sweet nothings into your ear about how get through this, we got this type of stuff. He's just not going to. And, you know, everyone has their thing.
Yep. And on just Riley for a second, I used to watch and be like, you know, if it's going to be, let's call it 8-8 in a game or something, and it's a big moment. I used to, his drops and a lot of his shots used to be automatic. Those thirds are going in. I've just seen him miss a little bit more lately than I'm accustomed to seeing. And I don't know if it's because of the new carbon fiber paddle he's playing with, but it just feels like there's a clip higher in unforced errors than I've seen previously. And that might just be a paddle adjustment. But one thing I do respect is that, you know, when he is missing uncharacteristically, which seems to be the case more so lately, is that he's not looking down at his paddle or blaming anything else. He's just, you know, it's next point. So I respect that a lot, but it does feel like he's missing a little bit more than which is silly to say, right? Because the dude doesn't miss very much in the first place. But when you see a miss third, you're like, what's wrong with him?
You see someone else. Yeah, you see someone else who maybe struggles with that. I don't know any names that come to mind, but it's just like, oh, he missed another third. Like Riley misses one out of 20. You're like, oh my God, is he okay? Yeah, right. So he's doing like the two-handed backhand on the other side of his body. When you're doing these crazy, contorting, incredible defensive shots, if you're a little off because of the paddle, because of whatever, you know, that's going to make a huge difference, even more of a difference than some, some other types of players. I totally get it. And, that makes a lot of sense. Either way.
Yeah. So what else, we have in terms of Red Rocks? Is that it?
I think so. So we're going to try to, I think we're going to try to do, the you and I episodes on Mondays and Tuesdays, which will be put out a day or two later. And then we'll have the sprinkled in guests, as needed. I believe we actually have, we're possibly going to have Leia this weekend or early next week. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, been chatting a little bit.
We're going to have to really try to pull some words out of her. She's a tough interview. It's hard to get her talking.
Yeah, right. So, and we're going to, I think Julian would like to come on as well at some point. Don't know what happened. We kind of had to pass over that with my sickness. So, sorry again to everyone. But, we might as well briefly talk about. So, we have the U.S. Open coming up, and we have, looks like, the Newport Beach Shootout. So, I'm guessing kind of the word on the street is Dundon was like, hey, sell me the U.S. Open. The ladies that own the U.S. Open said no. And so Dundon said, all right, well, we're going to compete against you and put a tournament that weekend. So I think that's pretty much what happened here. They had some possible situation where they could work something out with the U.S. Open and let PPA players play. It didn't work out. And all of a sudden there's a competing event on the same weekend, which is, that's Tommy Dundon. That's how he likes to do it, So here we are.
Yeah, and it looks like that Newport tournament that PPA is putting on has a stacked field. It's got kind of everybody's playing it. The Johns are playing it. Matt Riley are playing it. You got Tyson playing with Ignatovic. You got Colin Dawson, Tyler Lung, Travis Rettmeyer, Julian Arnold. You have a pretty stacked field, and it'll be interesting to see that going on at the same time as the U.S. Open, to be honest. So we'll see what happens. And then, the women's field is stacked as well. It's got all the signed PPA players are there, including an interesting partnership that that's happening on the women's side is Georgia Johnson, who I didn't realize, she's pickleball 17. I don't know if she's actually 17 yet.
HTB.
But you HTB. Got Georgia Johnson playing with Hurricane Tyra Black, fellow Brooklyn Aces member. So this is going to be kind of the first, I would say, kind of elite partnership for Tyra. And she's coming on fast. And it'll be really, I think when you, even with how raw and how green Tyra is right now, I would say her teaming up with Georgia, they've got the fastest hands in the women's game. So I would expect a ton of DQ.
Don't hit that ball shoulder level or above, because it probably ain't coming back with those two, Rob. So first off, are you sure her first elite partnership after playing several matches with Corinne Carr?
Second elite partnership. Sorry.
All right. Cleared up. Continue.
U.S. Open's interesting this year because obviously we don't have any of the signed PPA players that are going to make it, but we have we have a resurgence by Sam Querrey. He's coming out to play, I think, in quite a few events. He was telling me he gets in Friday night. Singles is on Sunday, and then you have a couple split age events Monday, Tuesday, and then I think it picks up with gender doubles on Friday and mixed on Saturday. So it's more pickleball for the people, which is always fun viewing wise. Definitely going to be a thin field, in terms of the U.S. Open for what's normally there. And, there's been a fair amount of complaints in the past with kind of pro treatment with then the US Open, you know, struggling to get lanyards to watch center court matches of, you know, your teammate or your friends or whatever it may be, stuff like that. And I got an email from them. I'm not sure if it goes to all pros, but there's a pro club area, which is going to have, you know, flat screen TVs to watch, air conditioned spot, kind of separated from, you know, Adam, you've been at the US Open many times. It's, it's a zoo. Like there's so many people milling about to go from kind of like where the vendors are to the bank of courts where the pros play. I mean, it's a 15-minute walk and it could be a 20-minute walk because you're getting stopped to chat with people. So it feels like, and there's pro parking this year where you're not, you have to take the shuttle, which is what you've had to do in the past. It feels like this year they are making a very intentional effort to treat the pro players better and put on a better experience as a professional player. So, you know, I'm curious to see how that all kind of plays out and to see what the experience is as a player this year. And yeah, I, you know, for pickleball as a whole, I think it's a loss, right? Pickleball, we want to see all the top players, you know, all in the same draw. And yeah, we don't have that at the US Open this year, which is a huge bummer. But hopefully something can happen in the future where we can have all the top players at the same spot.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a best vibe in pickleball. You know, you always have those people talking about, well, the Indian Wells facility is the best, but the energy and the vibe and, you know, some of the night matches and stuff for the US Open. So it's, you know, it's been an integral part of pickleball growth. And if not the biggest, one of the biggest tournaments, you know, going, and they've, I do all those things you said. They got that new building and they kind of put the pros back on those back two banks of courts. So, you know, to have it be a little bit separate and to have some extra amenities and kind of make an effort to do that is good. Is a good situation. And I think that's a fair assessment. Maybe, you know, in the infancy of the tournament, the first couple of years that wasn't as much of a point of emphasis, but, Now there's other options. There wasn't any other options before. So it's a different situation. And of course, I think optimally, this would hopefully get worked out and we can have all the talent in that spot for that tournament, which has a, you know, a short history, but a great history in terms of pickleball as a pro sport.
Yeah, 100% right. And I think we talk about it a fair amount, Adam, in terms of, you know, comparing tennis to pickleball and tennis having the history and the prestige of the Grand Slams of Roland Garros and Wimbledon and all the great traditions that come along with it and the past champions and, you know, watching videos from early mid 1900s of, you know, them playing. And pickleball is kind of creating, they're trying to create these tours and create this prestige. And, you know, two of the biggest tournaments and, you know, with US Open and Nationals are changing in a sense where, you know, US Open's not getting all the top players this year. Nationals, you mentioned Indian Wells. Nationals, we haven't talked about this yet. Nationals is moving from Indian Wells. Mm-hmm. PPA linked up with USA Pickleball, which who would have ever thought we'd see that day in terms of, you know, PPA creating their own rules but now working with USA Pickleball in terms of moving Nationals to, I believe it's Texas. I'm not sure where in Texas, but
I think it was like Brookhaven Country Club or something like that. Maybe I'm off with that, but I thought it was just a local country club in Dallas area. Yeah.
Yeah. So change is afoot, Adam. There's a lot going on, you know, in terms of prestige and like having that base of majors. You know, US Open was always in that conversation of, any person that's interested in pro pickleball, like I know when I first started, I'm sure when you first started, you look it up on YouTube, right? Pro pickleball. And like all of the matches that came to me first were all the classic US Open matches on Pickleball Channel.
Yep. Yep.
You know, seeing Marcin playing somebody in singles. Mm-hmm. And like, those are all the first matches that a lot of people see because those are the first results that show up in YouTube.
Right. So, and, hey, Robert, let's not forget that one of my first big results, 35 plus champion with Dave Fleming against Peter Hudako and DJ Howard.
Just that's saying. Huge. That's huge.
That's a big win. That's a big win.
US Open champion.
US Open champion, 35 yeah. plus. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go. But yeah, I watched all those videos too. The Pickleball Channel ones, the one where Matt Wright's taking over against Weinbach and Kyle. Like you have, I think it was Matt Wright and Jack Oxler. The first time I ever saw Matt Wright play, they're playing, you know, Wes Gabrielson and Daniel Moore on a side court. Like, I mean, this is good shit. I mean, we've only had this for 5 or 6 years, guys. So I mean, that's what it was. That was the tournament, you know, it was yeah. tournament and champions, fall brawl, Grand Canyon State Games, US Open, you know, like that's the tournaments that I was watching when I first started and the first, you know, YouTube videos that I saw that got me obsessed.
Yeah. Adam, if you were to say, you know, PPA, APP, MLP aside, if you were to say, you know, for pro pickleball, to determine what the four majors should be, let's doing it based off of history, prestige, even though there's not a lot of history in pickleball at this point in pro pickleball, right. there is some like US Open's obviously one, Nationals obviously one. What would you say the four majors should be and when should they be? I think spacing them out's reasonable too, right? Just like they do in other sports.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that the PPA year-end championship in Vegas at the Darling Tennis Center could be a good option for a major. There was Tournament of Champions was one of the biggest ones. I know that that's already had a pretty solid dip with all the situations going on. The U.S. Open, obviously a good one, and then Nationals. So yeah. I think, you know, it's things changing so quickly. I think at this point last year, you maybe would have put the APP New York tournament on there, but I'm not sure you can really put an APP tournament as a major as it stands right now.
No, but so, outside, I'm saying outside of
okay, yeah.
APP
so
or
right,
PPA,
okay. So, just like, so if it's those, then it has to be the ones with the most history, a short one, as you mentioned, or U.S. Open and Tournament of Champions. So
yeah.
Other than that, it's been a couple years that those have kind of stood the test of time. I mentioned the Grand Canyon State Games. That's almost nothing. And they had the Fall Brawl in St. George, just some of the older tournaments that were consistent every year. But it's been a couple years since those really grabbed anyone. So I think really yeah. it's Tournament of Champions and US Open.
Yeah. But I'm saying whether it's PPA or APP doesn't matter. What do you feel like should be, let's just say there's one tour and it's people can play, anybody can play anything. The markets, like I think, yes, US Open, I think Nationals has a fair amount of history. Uh-huh. TOC, yeah. like you said, is kind of a unique one because it's in Brigham City, which is, you know, I think
put
there's
it in
actually,
Ogden again. It used to be in Ogden. Just put it in Ogden. It's like so close to Salt Lake. Like Brigham yeah. City is far enough away for it to kind of suck to get there. Put it in Ogden again. There's such a great pickleball community and it being within 30 minutes of Salt Lake. I mean, that's way better.
That's
you don't have
better.
To eat Arby's or Chinese buffet. You know, if you get done late, like you do in Brigham City. So,
yeah, but I feel like, I do feel like the New York market is built for a major, like
yeah,
the New York APP, you know, if we're talking about pro pickleball as a whole, outside of the tours, I feel like having a major in New York City or a borough is perfect. You have to.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think you have to have one in Florida. Just too big yeah. of a player pool, and it's too much of a hotbed. You got to have one in the Southwest somewhere. And, you know, like you said, you know, maybe not quite the history, but it's New York, you know, it's
yeah.
New York. So to have one in the Northeast, or even possibly the PNW with a phenomenal pickleball history as well. You can almost
yeah.
have it in, you can almost have it in the four corners, you know, and
yeah.
Kind of touch a little bit of everything throughout the country. So I think those would be very reasonable spots. And I think it's, you know, maybe not a deal breaker, but I think it's important to have that history and that prestige and that, you know, knowing regardless of what's happening in the tour wars or what's going on, that you have this tournament that pros care about, that amateurs care about, and you can go compete in this tournament and, you know, kind of, you know, write your name in history books a little bit. So I think that that's a great aspect.
Yeah. And that's obviously basing it around the whole tennis premise of
yeah.
having tours, which I've constantly said, I don't believe is necessarily the best route for pro pickleball. I really feel the team-based stuff is where pickleball should be focused. Uh-huh. And I think it's, I mean, what it started, you know, MLP started end of 2021 was kind of the first event. We're halfway through 2023. I don't think there's, you know, I think MLP is going to continue to get better and better, but even where we're at now with MLP, I think it's far and above better, a better product than anything else out there in terms of viewership, in terms of live viewing experience, in terms of player experience. I just want pickleball and pro pickleball to move to that direction where it's a pro sports league and it's team-based. And we still have, call it the major tournaments, because, you know, people still want to see certain matchups. They don't want to see it week in and week out over and over and over, but they definitely want to see it. And I think it would be even more enjoyable and entertaining seeing it sporadically where, you know, you see a tournament, call it once a month versus every weekend. And you get to see like, okay, well, these players made pretty big gains between February and April. And now, you know, they lost in February to in the gold medal match, and now they're beating them in April. And I just think seeing it week in, week out makes it repetitive, makes it boring. But if we had, call it 8 to 12, ideally, I think ideally we have 12 MLP events throughout the year, and we have, you know, offer 12 tournaments throughout the year through the tours. That would be kind of like my ideal situation, because I think the team-based way is the way to go.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I don't want pickleball to be tennis either, but I know that there is some people out there that are like, oh, I mean, I think we even had Noah Rubin on, and he was just, the fact that it was called Challenger and that there are these possible majors. I mean, if it makes sense, I'm not that guy that, oh, we can't have this because it resembles tennis in any way, shape or form. I don't want it to be tennis, but at the same time, if it makes sense or it's something that, you know, logically is we're moving forward with and it resembles tennis a little bit, then so be it. So, but I do agree with you. I think that should be some balance, and maybe it could be, like you said, 12 and 12, 8 and 8, 12 and 8. I'm talking about MLP style events and regular tournament play. So that's what I'm talking about. And I think some balance is probably perfect. And I don't know exactly what the numbers would be, but I think that they can live together in harmony. And I think that it would probably be an ideal situation, like you said, to have a relatively even balance between regular tournaments and team events. And if I had to pick one way that I would lean, it would be more towards team events.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. What are your thoughts on, so the current MLP setup is 12 Premier, 12 Challenger. Do you think that's the correct balance between Premier and Challenger? Do you think the talent's deep enough to go, call it 16 Premier,
16 eight.
Challenge, 16
yeah.
8?
I think so. And I think it's come a long way in the last year. And of course, we'll, you know, I mean, I think it was like when they first decided it, I was like, oh man, 96 players. My goodness, you know, that's going to be thin. And certainly there's, you know, differences in the play between the Challenger level and the Premier level, but it's not like you're scraping the bottom of the barrel and, you know, the bottom of the Challenger level are missing every other shot. It's not like that. So the talent will get more and more. So I think that there could be a shift. I'm not sure that maybe that should happen in 2023. So 2024, but I think it will be sooner rather than later that the talent will be even more solid, and maybe going to a 16 and 8 could be a very reasonable type adjustment that they can make. 16 teams in Premier, 8 teams in Challenger is what I mean.
Nice. And I'm excited. I'm just excited for 2024 where there's going to be more continuity. I'm not sure how many events they're planning at this point or if it's even decided yet.
Right.
But I really like the idea of having a team and like having that be your team. Cause this year, you're with a team for three events and then you're switching teams to another team for the next three events. And it feels like it's really obviously hard to build well, you know, build brand recognition based on the players you have. And it's yeah, you're less so cheering for teams. You're more so cheering for players, regardless of what team they're on. So
right.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. And I think, you know, the more that teams can do stuff in their local markets, you know, now we have the Brooklyn Aces, the New York Hustlers, the New Jersey Fives, the Orlando Squeeze. So the more that the teams can actually bring in their players to their existing home markets and do events and do exhibitions and pro-ams and stuff like that to actually, get your local pickleball community attached to your specific team, the better. And I think that's going to be a much greater opportunity in 2024 when you have more consistency in terms of players on certain teams.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that associating those two together, team and player, they had to do something. So this current format's just part of the deal. But I think that I don't see how that wouldn't, you know, help. Yeah. I mean, you have it in other major sports. You have people that are fans of players and you have people that are team loyal and, you know, everything matters. And when you start to mash those two together or have a player that you like in your local community or local spot, it might not happen right away, but as we start, you know, getting year or two or more ahead, I don't see why that can't be a thing with pickleball as it is with a lot of the other major sports. So more growth is good, and that's where we're at, and I love it.
You know what I want to see, Adam? I think, and I don't remember who I've talked to this about, but I think we're still pretty far away in terms of having pickleball specific facilities versus like converted tennis, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's no secret that I believe that pickleball should be an indoor sport. It's a wiffle ball. The elements create a lot of challenges. It's even in tennis, wind has a big factor, but the ball is much heavier, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about a very light wiffle ball that gets manipulated in the wind a ton. And it just doesn't create, you know, we've all played tournaments where the wind's blowing 25 miles per hour and it's not even pickleball, right? It's like survival of the fittest, and we're out there slapping balls, whiffing balls. And it's a little silly, and it removes, you know, even though conditions are the same for everybody, it's whoever manages it best, it's still not a high quality product. And I think,
right.
I think where we need to be with it is indoor facilities. Specifically with Major League Pickleball, a facility I envision, and you know, this is taking money off the table and just kind of having a creative brain, is I think every Major League Pickleball team should have a facility. You know, let's call it, the New York area has three shared teams, right? So share a facility, it's all good.
Right.
But we should all have, you know, in each of these markets, we should all have indoor facilities where you have a stadium court built out, you have a couple grandstand courts built out with some bleachers, not to the scale of the stadium court. And then you have, call it 8 to 12 additional courts in that facility. And yeah, you need some square footage for this, and you need a big area. But, you know, I think that's going to be the future of creating pickleball facilities and venues, is building in a stadium court, building in some grandstand courts, and then having a sprinkling of 8 to 12 other courts where, you know, let's say if that was in Brooklyn, or let's say that was in New Jersey somewhere, New Jersey is probably more realistic in terms of, you know, available land, that's where, you know, and you have a team that plays 12 events throughout the year, you know.
Partnership with the Pickler. You're associated with the Pickler. I know the Hard Eights guys have done some investing in the Pickler. So each team has their own Pickler, and they have a kind of a exact such, I mean, you basically described it to a T right there, Robert. So
yeah, and then you have one in each MLP market, and that's where, you know, the team goes in there, has, you know, a month, like they train together. That's the direction of pickleball. And, you know, I think once the money's significant, and you're playing, you know, in each, well, let's call it each Major League Pickleball player's making, you know, low six figures at a minimum, and then you have people, you know, there's tell me a pickleball player that's like mid challenger that wouldn't pick up and move for a six figure income to go train and live in a different market and make pickleball a real professional career. I think everybody would do that, right? So I think that's the direction. If we were to go to a team based league. And I think that's what would make it exciting is you'd have continuity within your market. You'd have, you know, a team that you can get behind, players that you can get behind. You can, you know, the teams also know that these are their players for the next however long until they get traded, right. dropped, whatever. Right. So you right. can actually pump more sponsorship and marketing behind your players. Mm-hmm. I just, dude, I see a future where that's pro pickleball. And, I want to do anything I can to make that reality, because I think the path we're going on now with all the tournaments, with the competing tours, all of that stuff is just not the future. Sorry, that's a long-winded rant, but
no, I think that was the perfect rant and the perfect time to end this this segment, which was lovely, Robert. And thank you for that. I'm glad you went with that long-winded response, because it just made it a perfect time to quit. So,
all right.
So there's some great topics covered here, Robert. It was nice to get just the two of us on there. Those interviews were a little hectic. We were squeezed a little bit for time, but this was a nice one to kind of dump everything out there. And we're going to get back on schedule with some guests and some, of course, current events and hot topics moving forward. So great episode. And we'll be back early next week with another one for you guys.
Adam, I'm glad you feel better. And
I do too.
You are very casual with your you didn't try hard like I did with my hair, mm-hmm. being a try hard. You just let it flow. You took a shower and you just how it rested is how it rested.
How it rested. That's here we are.
Okay. Next time. Later.
Next time.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary. Yeah.